Hello everyone, Neil Platalia, thank you for downloading the latest episode of the Indian Startup Show. So in this week's episode, I chat to DVM Goel. He's the CEO of AttainU. It's a revolutionary new software engineering school with zero upfront fees. You only pay after you get the job. So in this conversation, he talks about disrupting the Indian education system, how it all works, and his past experiences of working in the Bay Area, and his biggest challenges so far. So please enjoy the show. Thank you. Hello, DVM. Thank you for coming on the Indian Startup Show today.
Hey, Neil. Glad to be here.
Please tell us what you're building.
Hi, Neil. We at AttainU are trying to solve higher education in India, where we are trying to fill in the gap between the college graduates and the industry.
Excellent. And what have you built?
Yeah. So what we are proposing is that the traditional MOOCs or the recorded self-video modules do not work. And that is primarily because of the as humans, we don't have enough motivations to be able to follow through on slightly longer term, slightly complicated topics. So what we are proposing is a live online college simulation where your lecture, your group assignments, your project work, and your TA-led discussions are all done in a full-time 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. manner, right? So one, we are building that entire process and entire flow. We already have a batch going on, which is going very strong, and people are have great progress and great engagements. The second thing which we are also doing is that India, after all, is a country which is not as rich as the West, right? So what that means is we want to make sure that any deserving student does not get left behind because they cannot afford to pay us upfront. Mm-hmm. So to that end, we are doing something called an income share agreement, where we say that, hey, instead of paying us upfront, once the service works for you, which is in terms of placement, you pay us after that. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's interesting, but businessable. Why that specific business model?
I think because, as I said, right, for example, it's only 10% of the country which makes more than 10 lakh rupees a year, right? So generally, by some stats, if you belong to a better or socioeconomic background, then you're five times as likely in India to get into a tier one college, right? So what that means is that, 80% of people, because of the socioeconomic background, are not able to realize their full potential, mm-hmm. right? So, and that is the majority of the people over here. So income share agreement helps us get those students up to date while doing a deferred fee payment model. Mm-hmm. So it aligns very well in the Indian context.
Mm-hmm. So basically, if I take the course, I only pay you if I get a job.
That's correct. Okay. To be able to do that, we also need to assess, most importantly, the motivation and the passion of the person coming in. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's not like a typical MOOCs where you opt in, you buy, and then you start. Right? You need to go through an application process. Mm-hmm.
In terms of percentage, what percentage of my salary do I have to give you then?
Yeah. So we are starting off at a 15% of salary. So what that means is there are a few key parts to it. Right. What that means is if you don't, let's say, get a job paying you more than 5 lakh rupees a year in our case, then you don't have to pay us anything. Mm-hmm. Only when you get a job, you pay us a percentage of what you make. So what you give us is never going to be more than the amount you make. Mm-hmm. It's in our case, it's 15% for 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. So if I'm interested, what will I be learning then on a day-to-day basis?
Right. So I think one of the key things which people over here don't understand, and which again, maybe your users over here, or listeners over here could benefit from, is that at the fresher level, when it comes to especially software engineering, it's more about understanding the core fundamental principles of software engineering, right? Not so much about the latest buzzword floating around in the market. So we have designed our courses to focus on the practical fundamentals of software engineering, as well as we are using the latest mean and the MERN stack languages in the tech pieces to help the student pick up those fundamentals.
How's it going so far then? Are you excited? What have been the challenges?
Definitely. So I'll give you, it has been actually really humbling for us to see the kind of response we got, right? For example, to talk about one particular thing, we actually had 6 people who had quit their full-time jobs to do this course in the first cohort which we started, right? Which is huge for any startup on day one, right? 6 people quitting their full-time jobs to do a full-time course.
Wow.
Right. So until now, yeah, exactly, right? And that has been a very humbling experience. But it is, again, we agree, we accept that it is a huge responsibility on our part as well. So I think it has been great so far, and people have been, we have had a lot of engagement, people asking a lot of questions on Slack and on a different Zoom and different tools which we use to teach them. Besides that, we have been having close to 100% completion rates on our daily practical assignments which we do.
So is this a full-time program then?
It is, Neil. So right now the program which we have is a full-time program. It requires you to do it from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. It's a 6 months full-time program. In future, at some point, we have had a huge demand for some people who are working in the industry. So we might want to do a part-time program as well. But again, whatever we do, we want to do it from a value-first perspective.
So the six people have quit. What are their backgrounds then? Were they tech people initially, or they have no tech background?
Yeah, so most of them have been from a non-technical background, right? For example, there have been two people who are working in the medical equipment operations domain. There was one person who was working in the telecommunications domain. So the idea is, as Mark Anderson also says, that software is going to eat away at the world, right? So what that means is software engineering is one of the largest growing verticals. Think of it like this. I think going forward, it's not going to be STEM. It's going to be STEM-C, right? So that's the perspective we have, and that's the perspective market has. So people are looking to get into this domain because they feel the chances in future are going to be, the growth potential in future is going to be much more.
So what is the state of the Indian education system then?
So I think it's a huge, humongous problem. I think let's talk about it in a more structured way, right? So let's first start at the end. So one thing to clearly understand is that Indian education system for the customers, which is the students and the parents, is about employment, right? It's not about exploration like in the West for majority of the people. Majority of the people going through the Indian education system are first generation from their family whose end goal or expectation is employment, right? So one is that which people sometimes don't understand. The second is that if you look at things from that perspective, then by third party estimates, around 70 to 90% of people coming out of colleges in India are considered unemployable, right? For example, Aspiring Minds did a survey with 30,000 random sample set. And only 5% of these people were able, these are computer science grads in India, right? And only 5% of them were actually able to write a compilable piece of trivial code, right? And these are people who have for 4 years have actually studied computer science. So of course, they're not going to get employment, right? But the challenge is, if you talk about it at a college level, I think it's without, I'm not going to name any authority because I don't want to get into trouble, but challenges with the regulatory authorities in India. They've set up a system in a way that they've kind of copied the West, and they have, because of which they have made it super research oriented. So all the hiring of the professors and the career progression of the professors and the curriculum and everything is copied from the West, right? So the career progression of a professor has nothing to do with the learning outcome of undergrad students, right? Because of which we see that these students are not industry aligned. The professor themselves have never worked in the industry, right? So these are people who many years ago did their PhD from some kind of a college, and they have no industry interaction in the past. Of course, they won't be able to teach people to work in the industry. Now, if you take a step back and talk about how the whole entrance and everything happens, right? So because of the whole supply-demand gap in the market, that, you know, the whole middle class in India sees education as a way to escape their, you know, regular life and get into a financially stable job, which creates, and because of the brick and mortar nature of these few elite colleges in India, it creates a whole supply demand gap, and hence we have the whole coaching industry and everything, right? So even the major of the student and the college the student gets to has nothing to do with the industry requirement. It's based on the supply demand. For example, as per the regulations, a particular engineering college to operate needs to maintain a particular number of majors, and depending on the supply demand and the marks the students get in those entrants, they decide, their major gets decided, right? Which is pretty much like a scam. It doesn't make sense at all. And the coaching, you might be surprised to know that the coaching industry in India, the whole tuition industry in India, is a $30 billion industry, right? Their markets are not generally that big, right? But the whole tuition industry in India is a huge industry, and because of which we also see India as a country has the highest youth suicide rates per capita.
Do you say suicide?
Suicide, yeah. Okay. India as a country has the highest youth suicide rates per capita. And it's an undue pressure which we end up putting on the students from 8th standard to 12th standard that they have to crack some particular examination. So these are some of the bigger challenges with the education in India. Things are not market aligned. There are huge supply demand gaps.
Mm-hmm. No, it sounds great what you're doing. Have you had any negative feedback?
Have I had any negative feedback? Yeah. I think from day one, with models like ours, where we are trying to disrupt higher education, people are a bit skeptical about it working. Mm-hmm. But our students have been really happy with the programs we are offering, right? Mm-hmm. Because for the first time in India, there is an education company which is putting the students first and saying that, hey, you don't need to pay us anything upfront. You only pay us once the program actually works for you.
In terms of accreditation then, do people get a certificate at the end, or you know, what happens at the end?
Sure. I think it's important to understand what a degree actually has come to mean, right? So when the Indian economy opened up in 1991 and people, the whole tech industry started booming and people started going to colleges, then for people, a degree became synonymous with skills, and the skills is what was required for a job. Mm-hmm. So over time, we are seeing that gap becoming wider and wider, right, between the degree and the skill. Like as per the colleges, there are 10 lakh engineers in the market. But as per the industry, it's only a small percentage of that which has the right skill set. So, and more recently, around 4 months back, even some of the biggest tech companies in the world, including Google, Apple, and IBM, dropped their degree requirement. So our belief is that we are going to be a skill-first company. Mm-hmm. We are going to be a problem-first company. We are going to be an industry-first company. And we consciously don't want to fall into the ambit of the regulatory bodies by being an accredited institute. This will allow us to innovate much faster and in a much effective way.
Mm-hmm. In terms of software engineering development, it's a hard skill. You know, can anyone learn it?
I think I would say it's a strong statement to make, but I think a large number of people can learn it. Than what is happening now, but I wouldn't say that anyone can learn it, right? Because, for example, to be able to work as a software engineer in India, especially, you need to be decently proficient in English, right? That is a requirement in the market. So, for example, in a country like India, if someone is not proficient in English, then first they would need to learn that, mm-hmm. right? Secondly, you do need a basic level of mental aptitude to be able to pick up software engineering skills. So I would not say that anyone can learn it, but definitely a large number of people can learn it, right? So what I mean to say by that is the entrance examination, which happens in India for the colleges, which is a PCM-based rigorous examination, that is definitely not required, but some kind of an assessment is required.
Is this like online or is it offline?
It is online. It is live online. So think of it like the future of MOOCs, if you might want to call it, right? So the challenge with the typical MOOCs, so MOOCs in its true form actually started in 2012 with Andrew Ng and Coursera, right? Mm-hmm. So, and at that time, the belief was that with MOOCs, with the high quality content, we would be able to solve higher education. But the challenge with that was that people don't have enough motivation to be able to follow through and engage, right? So we are trying to do an online model, but we are trying to simulate a college online, right? Which means that everything is going to be happening live. We are not going to leave the student alone, right? So yes, it is online. The advantage of online is that in our case, 60-70% of our students are not even in tier one cities, right? They're doing it from tier two, tier three cities in India. So they don't have to move to any city and pay for their lodging and for their food and travel and everything.
Cool. And how many instructors do you have? How big is the team?
It's a small team right now. It's early days. We have four people. One is me. I have my background in deep tech. I did my graduation 7-8 years ago from IIT Bombay. After that, worked with some of the best tech companies in the world in Bay Area. My co-founder Vaibhav, he was an early founding team member of Geeks for Geeks, which is the largest computer science interview prep platform in the world. Our instructor and the person taking care of the curriculum is Ansel. So Ansel is a self-taught engineer back in 2012, and in his last gig, he was heading the tech team at Akshara Foundation.
So how big do you want to go with this then?
I think for us, it's important to be able to solve this problem at scale, right? Mm-hmm. And in India, if you look at the 18 to 24 age group, it's 150 to 200 million people, mm-hmm. right? And right now we have a college enrollment rate of 23%, right? So that means that 23% of people in that age group end up attending some kind of higher education. Mm-hmm. But that percentage is going to go up. In China, it's closer to 56%, and in US, it's closer to 80%. Mm-hmm. So we know that that enrollments are going to go up. So eventually, we want to be able to build a system which would cater to the entire audience. Mm-hmm. Whatever the stream is, whatever the starting level is, whatever the industry requirement is. Mm-hmm. And that can only happen when we are online.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, so early days. But how confident are you of success?
We are pretty confident. But again, one key important thing is iteration. Right? We know that the current things are not working, whether it is in terms of MOOCs, whether it is in terms of colleges. We are confident in the first step we have taken. There have been some examples of online live model working in other domains. So we are confident that this should work. But again, as I said, iteration is the key over here.
So in 30 years time then, what would this startup look like then? Look into your crystal ball.
Right. So let me, I think in a 10 or 20 years time, we would want to build a college alternative, mm-hmm. which is elastically scalable as per the market demands, which is accessible to anyone irrespective of the city they are in, which is affordable to everyone irrespective of their socioeconomic background, mm-hmm. right? So you want to build a college of the future, which can cater to 150, 200 million people in a 10, 20 year timeline. I think in a 30 year timeline, eventually we would want to go down the education into the school level as well. I believe that once we are able to solve the supply demand gaps in higher education, then the youth suicide rates and the whole supplemental education and the coaching market would go away. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned your background. What was it like working in the Bay Area?
I think it was a great experience. There are definitely some differences between the ecosystems in India and the ecosystems in West. It's also a different set of challenges which needs to be solved in both the countries, depending on where they are at in the development phase. But overall, I think it was a great working experience. I learned a lot of things. I worked with some of the best people in the world.
Any names we might know of?
So I worked with this company called Post Intelligence, and the founders of it were early Google employees, right? Like within 500 Google employees. After that, that company got acquired by Uber. So we were instrumental in setting up the advertisement tech team at Uber in the San Francisco office.
Great. What was the best thing about working in the Bay Area?
I think the culture is very supportive. People are very aspiring, and the ecosystem allows them to take longer term bets, right? I've always predominantly been a startup guy. Mm-hmm. And for a startup, it's important to have a longer horizon, mm-hmm. and the ecosystem to be able to allow startup founders to be able to take a longer term bet.
Cool. So why move back to India then?
At some point, after having worked with small and big companies, I had kind of like a quarter life crisis, right? Okay. So I kind of wondered that, you know, what do I want to do next? I work with startup in Bay Area. I work with a big company in Bay Area. So what do I want to do next? So I recognized that education, I had been associated with two India-based education NGOs, Pratham and India Literacy Project. So I understood the ground realities of education. I knew that it's only the tip of the iceberg which is out there in the market. I knew that India is a young country where 50% of the population is younger than 26.8, which are going to go through the education system in the next 20, 30 years. So I understood that if these people went through a flawed system and come out disillusioned, then India is not, the future of the country itself is not very bright in that case. So for me, education is a problem which there are no two ways about it. We do desperately need to solve it, mm-hmm. right? And I think in some ways that was my calling.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff. So if people are listening and want to do their own education startup, what advice would you give them?
The biggest key piece of advice I would say is that it's a slightly longer term journey compared to other online startups. So what that means is that you need to have your convictions very strong, right? Don't go by the market trends. Don't go by the buzzwords. Mm-hmm. Understand the problems really well. Talk to your customers. Talk to all the different stakeholders. Do your research. And once you have your mental framework and convictions really strong, only then get into the education domain. But I do definitely believe that it's something which would require multiple people to join hands and solve together.
Mm-hmm. No, excellent. So it was early days in the startup. How's it impacted on your like life and relationships then?
I think that's always a tricky one, right? So it does take in a lot of work, definitely. But I somehow have this belief that I have been privileged enough to get this opportunity which I wanted to work on. So while I have this opportunity, I do want to give it my 100%. But at the same time, you have to definitely balance your health and your personal life. But somewhere it does take out time from your personal life. And the people over there, you need to set the expectations correctly upfront. So that definitely helps if people over there are supportive.
Cool. And how are you attracting people to the website then, using any like specific marketing strategies?
Right. So till now, it has mostly been through Facebook marketing. Yep. We have been luckily picked up by a few YouTubers for free, mm-hmm. who believed in what we are doing. So that has given us some audience. Next, we are also planning to approach some colleges in India, to see if they would want to partner with us to get their students trained for the industry ready skills through us.
Okay. Do you think anyone can be an entrepreneur then? Do you have to be a bit mad, do you think?
I think more, again, so this is, I wouldn't say anyone, but I would say definitely say that more people than they think they could be can be entrepreneurs, right? So it's something which you get a better hang of as you do it versus when you think about it. It's something which you learn on the go. Mm-hmm. It's still very early for me, but I believe that patience and hard work and grit and never giving up attitude are the key pieces over here, right? Even if you look at two of the biggest or the most successful companies right now, Uber and Airbnb, then they have had a hard time in the beginning, right? We all know about that. So that motivation and that grit and that iteration and patience are key.
Actually, you mentioned motivations before. What motivates you then?
For me, it's important. It's a bit of a philosophical argument. I personally believe in my life that from a super rational point of view, that as humans, we have a very short lifespan. So what that means is money should not be a motivation because it's something which is limited in our own 80, 90 year lifespan. So what you're working towards in life, for me, should be something which has a much bigger lasting impact, right? And that is what motivates me. If I'm able to solve a problem which has a much bigger lasting impact, then that would be a well-lived life for me.
So in an ideal scenario, what would success look like then?
Success for me in the ideal scenario would look like the whole coaching and the whole coaching and the supplemental education system in India goes away. Every student in their school is able to enjoy and socialize in their school life. And then at the end of it, they find high quality education, which is easily affordable and accessible for them, as well as is super aligned to the industry, which is the main requirement in India, so that they do get jobs after that.
Cool. Last few questions then. Have you got any books or blogs do you want to recommend to our listeners?
Definitely. I believe for anyone who is looking to do a startup, they should definitely follow the startup school at Y Combinator. Mm-hmm. Although some parts of it might be specific to the Western countries because Indian market behaves a bit differently. That would be one. Second, I believe is if someone is looking to do something in India, there's a book called Poor Economics, which is one of my all-time favorites. They have tried to scientifically break down what works, what doesn't work, and why in India.
Do you have any hobbies and interests away from your startup?
Definitely. I think they have all taken a back seat for now. But I do definitely love swimming. I love reading books. Mm-hmm. I love discussing political topics. I believe politics is something which plays a huge role in how the future of countries get decided or the roadmap gets laid out.
Is there any specific people you're actually targeting then? Because obviously the people who are already there, they've switched careers, as it were. So are those the people you're trying to target?
No. So our biggest target segment is people who have immediately graduated from some kind of a college, are disillusioned by the system now, mm-hmm. and are looking for a second chance. Mm-hmm. So that is our immediate target segment.
Excellent. Okay. One last question then. For people who want more information on you and attain you, what must they do?
They could check out our website. They could reach me on my email, which is divyam@attainyou.com. They could also WhatsApp me, and the number is given on the website. So I'm always happy to talk to people, to help them understand the domain, to answer questions. I think it's a two-way road where I am also able to continuously iterate on my mental frameworks and learn from them.
Divyam, thank you for coming on the show today.
Thanks, Neil. Thanks a lot for having me.
Brilliant. I wish you all the best.
Thank you, Neil.
Cheers, buddy. Thank you. Bye. Thanks to VM for coming on the show today. That's the end of the show. If you liked it, please leave a rating and a review of the show. And search for the Indian Startup Show on iTunes, Castbox, India, Spotify, Stitcher and Overcast, Pocket Cast, Downcast, Instacast, Podkicker and Apple TV. And if you're building something exciting, please send me an email, hello@neilpatel.co, or tweet @IndianStartupSH, or you can go to facebook.com/IndianStartupShow. We'd love to connect. Thank you and goodbye.